This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. Hey, Tig.
Yes.
You ready to do this episode?
Oh, yes. I'm ready to do this episode.
I mean, we cover a lot in this.
We do. We cover a lot. I feel like this is the most on track we've stayed. In a while.
Yes. Yes.
In a while.
Well, it helped because your dear, lovely Stephanie is with us. And I think we were trying to impress her by staying on track.
I've learned over the years that me staying on track on a podcast is not what keeps her around.
I see. Yeah. I see. But we do talk about sexuality a lot.
We do. We barely talk about cancer. People are probably going to think I'm being sarcastic, but it's true. We barely talk about it.
Yeah.
You tried to talk more about it, but I was like, we don't need to.
You're gonna enjoy this because this is a documentary about Tig called Tig, and we're talking to Tig.
Wow.
Enjoy. Yeah.
It all started when Tig and Cheryl met in the mid-2000s.
Hey, nice to meet you, Tig. I'm Cheryl Hines.
Hi, Cheryl. I'm Tig Notaro. Should we do a podcast about documentaries?
Yes.
A podcast about documentaries?
Is this microphone on?
Five furious frogs fiddling faintly. Furious frogs fiddling faintly. Five furious frogs fiddling faintly.
I am the first ever podcast. And Tig and Cheryl are following in the sound of my footsteps.
Let's get started.
I'm so ready.
Tig and Cheryl.
True story.
Cheryl, it's me again.
Tig, it's time to do it again.
We are going to do it again.
We're doing something really special today.
We are doing something really special.
I mean, it's kind of weird, actually. Did you find this weird?
I did, because I've seen this documentary before. In fact, I've lived this documentary. And I have not revisited it since it came out. And,
really?
Yeah. I have not sat around watching this. Do you want to tell people what?
Yeah, I'll tell people what it is. So this week we're talking about Tig.
Oh.
That's the name of the documentary on Netflix. It's called Tig. Tig, in case you didn't know, Tig is a 2015 documentary directed by Christina Goolsbee and Ashley York. And it tells the story of stand-up comedian Tig Notaro as she reacts to a series of major life crises. Is that how you say it? Or do you say crises? No, crises.
I say crises.
Okay, I'll stick with crises. Delivering a stand-up set that turns into a viral sensation. The film also chronicles Tig's attempts to have a baby, as well as the story of Tig and her future wife, Stephanie, falling in love. Tig premiered at Sundance and was produced and distributed by Netflix. And Tig, I don't know if you know this, but we have a very special guest with us today.
Ooh, who?
Well, she's sitting right next to you. We have Stephanie Allen. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to Tig and Cheryl True Story.
Stephanie from the Tig documentary.
From the Tig documentary.
I have so many questions for you guys. I can't even.
I want to tell you, Stephanie, it's very genuine. Whenever Cheryl says something and her voice drops a few octaves,
so.
I've, I've known Cheryl a long time, and I've only through this documentary learned this about her, that when she goes like that, she is very much,
I mean,
telling
business.
The truth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, going to a real place. Yeah. So you guys are married.
Way to blow the whole...
Oh, was that a reveal? Wait,
yeah.
Come on. People know this. Anybody that has listened to 1 second of this podcast, that's all you talk about is your beautiful wife, Stephanie. It's like, okay, this is the one time that I feel like
massive spoiler alert.
This is not a spoiler
Cheryl,
alert.
Cheryl, spoiler alerts everything.
So you guys both sat and watched this because you knew we were going to talk about it. How was that to watch it?
It blew my mind. Like, it was a little hard to watch, and then I also really enjoyed watching it, but it feels like a lifetime ago.
Really?
It was reminding me of things. I'm like, oh my God. And to see Tig before we sort of were together, and to see myself, it's like, oh my God, when we were filming In a World, we were just like, didn't know strangers, like in a scene together.
Yeah. And even when we started hanging out as friends, but liking each other, it was so interesting. In fact, there's a moment in the movie when I say, oh, well, you don't know me that well. when we were at the Grammy Museum. And it's funny to think how little we knew each other and how well we know each other now. Of course, always learning more about one another. But that was crazy.
I can't even imagine watching yourself do real things, because it's hard enough watching yourself as an actress, going back and watching a project. Even if it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I have a hard time watching myself do anything anyway, because it just feels weird. But I can sort of excuse it because I'm acting and it's not really me. But watching you guys, I felt like this has to be so weird for you. I mean, and I mean, I'm very intrigued by it all because, like I said in the introduction, you know, this is your story, Tig, of you really hitting some very hard times. And
yes.
I'm fascinated at the idea that there were cameras rolling during this. And it seems like it would be weird enough that there are cameras rolling when you were falling in love with Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, you know, I guess people watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, so we see that all the time. But
those deep, true love stories. That's what you've boiled this down to, is just another season of The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Except no bachelor showed up.
It's interesting because when we first started just hanging out as friends or whatever you want to call it, she was like, oh, you know, a documentary is being made on me. So there's like cameras following me around. I was like, really? And it wasn't a part of us or me. It was just this documentary was being made. And so for a very long time, I was hiding behind couches and like standing behind the camera, not participating in it. And then as time went on, because that was a long time that they were making.
You were
that
hiding
movie.
Behind couches?
Yeah.
I guess pretty well. I never saw that.
I didn't see it either. She was very successful.
My friend, an old friend of mine, an old dear friend, Christina Goolsbee, had approached me, and she's always worked in the documentary, docu-TV world. And when she approached me about making a documentary about my life, it was when all of this was going on with me. And I thought, not because I don't have faith in Christina, but because things just fall apart all the time in the world of Hollywood. And I also didn't really understand what it meant to have a documentary made about me. And Stephanie's nodding yes, because I would imagine you agree. You watch a documentary and you're watching the edited version, but you don't really understand.
Watching it the other night, I'm like, why did we do this?
Yes. And when Christina approached me about it, I was excited for her to potentially make a documentary, but I was the subject And I just said, yeah, sure, let's do it. Because right. I kind of thought it would be something that
she'd do off on her own.
Or yeah, or maybe it would like not actually happen.
Right.
Or I also didn't understand what it really meant. I just was like, yeah, sure, let's do that.
Yeah.
And I have no regrets about it. It's so incredible to have this time capsule.
Yeah.
I feel very lucky that she approached me. It just was like, this is so intense.
Yeah. So just to, listen, I always have to keep this on track, Stephanie. You have to understand. To just talk about the documentary for a second, because, and I'm dying to get to your relationship, but I feel like it kind of pops later in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So Tig, it starts out with you and it shows your beginning before something happened that really put you on the map in a big way. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
basically when you met me.
That's so crazy.
I always tell Cheryl was one of my first and earlier supporters. Remember when you took me around to all the major yes. agencies in Hollywood trying to get somebody to yes. sign me, for God's yes. sake? And everybody said a big no thank you and turned away from me and turned back to you in the meetings. And we're like, so what's going on, Cheryl? And we'd go outside of the building and you'd be like, okay, what's our next plan? And I was like, they don't want me, Cheryl. And you were like, somebody's going to want. I only got an agent 2 years ago. And what's funny is you and I have the same agent now. Dar.
Oh, I love Dar.
I love Dar.
Anyway, so yeah, my early days when I was
just doing stand-up.
This random friend of Cheryl.
Yeah, because I saw you do stand-up. Wasn't it at the Improv, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought you were so funny and you were hilarious. And I was like, oh my God, everybody should know about you. Everybody should see you and hear you.
You told me to drop my VHS tapes off in your mailbox.
I like that I wouldn't let you come in the house.
Not until you have an agent.
So you were, you were like on the beat.
On the scene.
Comedians don't say you're on the beat. That's like a journalist.
No, that's like a cop.
Yeah. Oh, it's
like
a cop. That. You were
it's
on the
a
beat.
Cop.
Okay, and you're doing.
Stephanie was in junior high school.
And you're doing pretty well in that world of the comedy. But, I mean, you weren't a household name. People weren't really talking about you. Do you mind me
just
saying
you.
That? Falling on deaf ears, by the way. Okay, and then you find out, you want to talk us through the series of events that happened to you.
Yeah, I started to get ill, and I remember it because I rarely got sick, not a hypochondriac, don't have this history in my life of any of this, but I got really sick, and I was supposed to meet a friend for lunch, and I said, let's touch base tomorrow. I'm sure I'll feel better. I just haven't been feeling well for the past week. And then shortly after, just everything fell apart. And I was in the middle of filming this movie called In a World that Stephanie was in.
Okay, can I ask you about that for one second?
Mm-hmm.
So there's footage of you guys shooting this film. How did you...
Yeah.
The documentary didn't start shooting then. This was just found footage from...
This is the in-between takes.
Lake Bell, who directed that movie, had that footage and provided it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so we were able to get these moments in between, which is also crazy because I was so sick. I was coughing, I was having trouble breathing, and it's all on camera with me in between takes. And so you can see that part of the footage and think that I'm aware that I'm on camera, but I'm not. You're truly just I was truly in between takes trying to gather myself so I could perform.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting because I was watching it. I was thinking, how does this documentarian have footage of her coughing and being sick on film?
Yeah, it's from the actual camera of the movie.
Crazy.
Yeah, and so while we were filming the movie, I was very ill, but I didn't know what was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I was just really, really struggling. I was having trouble breathing. I was coughing. I was congested. My stomach hurt. And I just thought, I don't know what I thought, but I told production I wasn't feeling well. And they said, you know, we can put a little cot for you if you want to lie down, and also no pressure to come in. And I said, no, I think I can do this. Meanwhile, I didn't know that I had this highly contagious disease.
Oh, it's contagious?
Yes. My intestinal disease is like, you have to have a hazmat suit to be around.
Are you serious? I didn't know it's contagious.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Are you serious? I'm very serious.
And so anyway, they did set up a cot for me and I'd go lie down. But I think I was really good at pulling it together and pushing through.
I had no idea.
And
you didn't?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
You had no idea she wasn't feeling well?
I thought she had a cold. Like, she was kind of coughing, and it was like, I remember going, oh, do you want to go get some tea? It just seemed like somebody had a cold on set, and we weren't really...
Do you want some tea for your invasive cancer?
I'll go with you.
That you don't know about yet?
That's very sweet of you, Stephanie. She's not a doctor, Tig. She doesn't know what's wrong with you.
No.
I just noticed some coughing.
No, she's not a doctor.
But yeah. It wasn't clear. And I mean, and again, that's also showing how we really didn't know each other. Because I had no idea there was even a bed.
Yeah, I didn't know at all what was going on. I love that you're like, that shows we didn't know each other. I didn't know there was a bed. Because clearly, yeah. So like 2 days after we wrapped that movie, I collapsed at my girlfriend's house. I was dating somebody else. Awkward. And what's also bizarre is, Stephanie, we had a trailer that had one of those accordion yeah. doors that separated our rooms.
Also tells you where we were in our careers.
Yeah, that's called a double banger. When you have to share a trailer with somebody.
Where there's an accordion wall that you can go open.
An accordion wall that people
that you can
hear
also,
you.
Yeah. And you can also play the accordion wall.
I just shared a double banger with Brad Garrett.
Oh, well, look at you not progressing in your career all these years. I wish we could go back in time and open the accordion wall and see Stephanie leaning over to try and eavesdrop on
cup,
my conversation.
With a cup against yeah. the wall.
But Stephanie heard me. Through yeah. the easy accordion. To listen through accordion wall, say to my girlfriend at the time, there is something terribly wrong with me. Right, Stephanie?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh.
Were you like, fur, the accordion door, like giving her a signal,
okay?
I'm here.
She started playing a polka. a very sad polka.
I mean, what do you do? You can't like knock on the wall.
I didn't
and go,
say
hey,
any.
I can hear you.
There, well, there was
are you
no
okay?
wall. There was an accordion.
Just the accordion.
Knock on the accordion. Come and knock on my accordion.
Okay, so you hear that? That's what do you do?
So 2 days after,
yeah,
I collapse.
Okay.
And just a side note, mm-hmm. a couple of times my girlfriend had taken me to urgent care to get IVs. In my arms. This was just before I even collapsed. And I was transported in and out of urgent care and my girlfriend's car in a wheelchair. I was 40 years old. How many times can a person be in a wheelchair before you go, maybe we should look a little deeper?
Yeah, it seems like one time I'd be like, hey, what's up?
Something's going on.
Yeah, something's going on. So then I find, and it's funny because when I was at my girlfriend's house, I thought, this illness was going on so long that I'm probably being dramatic. I just need to get up, take a bath, and just get my day started.
Just shake it
that
off.
That was, yeah. And so I took a bath, and she walked by, and she was like, how are you doing? I was like, I'm actually feeling good. She goes, oh, good. So she went downstairs, and I was like, yeah, I'm fine. So I get out of the bath, and I'm headed down her stairs, and I collapse. At that point, she takes me to the ER. And that's when I was admitted and I found out I had C. diff, which is the intestinal disease, potentially fatal disease. Jeez. It is so intense. And when I had been going to get an IV through urgent care, they were giving me antibiotics for my symptoms. They hadn't diagnosed me with pneumonia, but they were giving me antibiotics. Antibiotics can cause C. diff. It can clear out all of the good bacteria in your gut. And sometimes C. diff is alone to thrive. And that's what happened to me. And typically it happens to very young or very old people or people with compromised immune systems. And it's insane because I was lying there in the hospital. I think it was 10 days that I was in there. And the doctors were baffled that I had C. diff. They were just like, this is so crazy. You're so young. And nobody knew I had invasive cancer also.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm just lying there with pneumonia, C. diff, and invasive cancer all at once, which are all three potentially deadly diseases.
Yeah, and you had lost so much weight, you were a skeleton.
Yeah.
Which that was a frightening, that was actually a really frightening image in the documentary.
Well, that image, I have to say, I had told the filmmakers, I didn't know where that picture was. And I said, you know, we talk a lot in the documentary about how thin I am after I was sick, but I feel like people need to see it. And I wish I could find a picture. And they kept saying, it's not that big of a deal. I think people get it. And then I found that picture and I showed them and they were like, oh my God, that has to go in there. And that picture is from when my because my mother, when I was released from the hospital with C. diff, a few days later, my mother tripped, hit her head and was in a coma. And I had to go fly to Texas to take her off life support. And once I took her off life support and we had her funeral, I was bedridden again in Texas because even when you test negative for C. diff, it's still a massive struggle because your insides are completely wrecked. I can't even explain to you how long it has taken me to get through that. And so I took that picture because my girlfriend back in LA texted me, how you doing, babe? And it was so hard. I had not seen her in a week and I was losing like half a pound to a pound a day. And so I just decided to take a picture of myself and send that. And I thought it'd be funny to smile really big. And I sent her that. And she was like, oh my God. And she got on a plane and flew out to see me immediately.
I mean, you do seem like the happiest sick person I've ever seen. Like you have comedians. Picture? Well, yeah, comedians in your room. You have Sarah Silverman doing stand-up comedy in your room for you. It's like, you know, you make it look fun.
Sure it wasn't fun. It was not fun.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
There is something to that, though, because even in like the past few years with Tig's health issues, every time we're in the hospital, there's something funny about it. And as the worse it is, it's like, oh my God, like it hits this humor very sort of inappropriately, but like you almost can't help yourself.
You know, most people will just, you know, have one thing like, oh, I did get pneumonia and I was in the hospital for 3 days. Whew, that was tough. But when it's you, it's like you were just hit with a real shit show of diseases and issues. Okay, so you get a call from your stepfather saying that your mother fell and went into the hospital and she's didn't make it or wasn't gonna make it.
She's probably not going to make it.
So you get out there right away. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you guys had to take her off life support, and your brother and your stepfather couldn't really bear it. But you stayed there with her.
Yeah.
Because women are very strong. Men have such, I'm generalizing, but that's what I like to do. But men have such, like, sweet hearts. Sometimes it's hard for them when something really tough happens. It's hard for them to see it. And I think women.
Are you saying I don't have a sweetheart?
Mm-mm. That's what I'm saying. That's what I was trying to tell you. You've got a heart of stone. So you could take it.
I could
take all this. This is fine.
So your mom passes away in front of your eyes.
Yes.
You go back into the hospital.
I didn't go back into the hospital. I did eventually when I had cancer. Yeah, but not immediately. I went back to her house and just was, you know, my brother and my stepfather were picking out caskets and tombstones, and I was just lying in bed like, I couldn't even believe, like, they were handing me brochures, like, for tombstones and caskets and flower arrangements. And my mother was alive days ago. And I was so sick. And I was like, I can't even do this. Like, whatever you guys want to pick. I was also hiding how sick I was to the best of my ability, because I didn't feel, my mother was the person that I would have collapsed into the arms of and shared my pain emotionally and physically, and she was gone. And my stepfather is a very stoic person, and I just was like, I don't feel well and I'm sad. You guys just please deal with things.
Yeah.
It was a very trying time, to say the very least.
So then you get back on stage and you're doing stand-up, and then...
Not for a while. I didn't get back on stage. Well, all that happened in March with pneumonia, C. diff, and then I was diagnosed with cancer in July. My mother died in March too. So it was pneumonia, C. diff, my mother died, and then my girlfriend and I broke up. And then I was diagnosed with cancer. That's when I got on stage, which was 4 months later. But all of that happened in a 4-month period of time.
Yeah.
My head was spinning nonstop. And so when I was diagnosed with cancer, that's kind of when everything became somewhat humorous to me, because it was so unbelievable. I didn't start laughing right when I got my cancer diagnosis. I'm not mentally ill, but I was really, when people would ask how I was doing, I was like, I have so moved beyond the last time you talked to me. I now have invasive cancer. Anyway, I felt compelled to get on stage because I had this show booked. I actually didn't feel compelled. I didn't want to get on stage, but Ira Glass was pushing me to talk about it on stage. Flanagan, who owns Largo, he was encouraging me to not cancel my booking. And I thought they were insane. And I was actually a little bit offended because I thought they didn't understand how destroyed I was.
Yeah.
And so I went on stage. I decided last minute to just go ahead, keep the booking. Because honestly, with my own health and my mother dying completely out of nowhere, I started to really get in touch with how fragile life was. And I could see that I could potentially be dead in a matter of months. Mm-hmm. And so my love for stand-up, I wanted to get on stage one more time.
Let's hear, it's weird to cut to a clip of you when I'm talking to you, but let's hear you getting on stage after finding out your diagnosis.
Hello. Good evening. Hello.
This is at Largo in Los Angeles.
I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God. Before I performed that night, I was in the shower and I was thinking, how am I going to get into this material? How am I going to talk about all this? And then I had this thought run through my head where I thought, oh, what if I walk out and I'm like, hello, good evening. I have cancer. How's everyone doing? Kind of like, are there any birthdays tonight? Mm-hmm. Anybody celebrating anything? And it made me laugh so hard. And so I showed up to the show with that sort of, you know, intention and spirit.
And so that night basically changed your life, because they don't allow you to videotape anything at the Largo Theater. But
no.
But somebody was audio taping it.
I had asked Alec, the sound guy, to record the audio because I told Ira Glass that I'd just go ahead and try to see what I could come up with, because he wanted material for This American Life. I recorded that.
And then what happened that night? You did your stand-up and you talked very candidly about what was going on in your life and cancer and
the loss of my mother and
the loss of your mother. And I'm sure you didn't know how people were going to respond, and people were laughing, people were crying.
People were stunned. It was such a roller coaster, the whole show.
And then I know at one point you're asking, should you stop talking about it? And they were yelling, no, no fucking way. Keep going.
Yeah. I almost started crying when that guy yelled out to me. It was so touching.
It really was. And it's, so what happened that night?
It was really so crazy, because I got off stage and my friends and I went to Swingers, the diner
that
is now
Swingers.
Closed.
We
went and hung out until 2 or 3 in the morning, just kind of on this high of like, that was such an insane show. Like, I couldn't even believe I had been so vulnerable and honest on stage. And so we hung out all night, and then I went home and I turned my phone off and I went to bed. And I did not know, you have to understand, was not on Twitter, not on Instagram. I had a Facebook page where I was friends with like my aunt and cousins and friends. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot explain how much I was out of touch at the time. Even still a bit now, but really then. Mm-hmm. So I turn my phone off, I go to bed, and I wake up, have no idea that the audience is tweeting, all of the comedians are tweeting, people were blogging about it, and it had gone viral, and I had slept until like noon that day. And when I turned my phone on, I truly had book deal offers. The New York Times was calling. I always tell people I felt like a great-great-grandmother that woke up and was like, what happened? Like, who did what? And so I called Ira Glass and I just said, oh, I have this recording and maybe you could use some of it. I don't know. And then he played it on This American Life and it exploded. And then it became an album, which I had decided for a while I wasn't going to release because I really felt like it was a you had to be there moment. Mm-hmm. But for 2 months, people kept saying, you have to put it out. You have to put it out. And I was like, it's not my best work. You know, it was like an open mic.
Uh-huh.
I just walked on stage and was...
Yeah.
Anyway, and then it became the number one selling album around the world that year.
And then you were nominated for a Grammy?
I was, but I lost to Kathy Griffin. Like, I think she had an album called Look at My Butt Crack or something. That
yeah,
won that
hers
year.
Was more polished, I'm sure. And I'm sure the audio quality was much better than yours.
But listen, okay. I don't have any hard feelings about losing that. I really did not do that show to get attention. I did not do that show thinking it would become Grammy nominated or the best-selling album of the year, you know?
Well, have you ever read the book The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra?
No. Have you, Stephanie?
I haven't read it.
One of the best ideas in that book is to disconnect from the outcome of whatever it is you're trying to achieve. So if you had set out that night saying, I'm gonna win a Grammy, I can't. And you like every day you woke up and you were like, how can I win a Grammy? How can I be nominated for a Grammy? I'm gonna start writing something. So when you disconnect from what it is you're hoping to get back from this, and you just go, okay, I'm gonna go out there. I wanna connect with the audience. I'm going to tell my story and see if they understand it. So you do that and you do the very best version of that. And then good things come to you from it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're riding high. Things are exciting. You've broken up with your previous girlfriend. And now Stephanie, oh, you guys are reunited because the movie that you did, what was it called?
In a World.
In a World. So that now is premiering at Sundance and you guys see each other again. Mm-hmm. And was it sparks or were you like, oh, hey, I remember you.
Well,
you were coughing.
Before Sundance, we had run into each other like a week after I resurfaced out into the world, which is maybe 6 months later. And I saw her at a show. And do you want to tell?
Well, I think what's so crazy about it and even thinking about it now is that when we had finished In a World, we didn't exchange numbers. We never saw each other again. So she went and had all this horrible year. And then when I saw her again a year later, I had heard she had cancer because I had heard of that show, but that was kind of it. So she kind of seemed the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
And what was so jarring is that she was in a completely different place when we reunited.
So when you saw her, was there a film crew following her everywhere?
Not that night, but I think during the day, right, Tig?
I mean, yeah, they were intermittently. If I had doctor's appointments or I had shows or seeing family and just important moments.
I mean, how did the doctor's office feel when you showed up with a camera crew?
Well, they, of course, clear all of that before.
It's like, yeah, God, in. Here she comes. Get ready. This lady and her camera crew.
It was
and all
not
her diseases.
My idea. It was not my idea to have a documentary made about myself.
So you spark, you start texting, and all the while, Tig, you, even at the beginning of this documentary, you had said that you wanted to have a baby, and it was time to start thinking about that. So you were ready to harvest your eggs. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Harvest my eggs.
And then so after your, oh God, we really glossed over the cancer.
That's okay.
But I mean, it's so much to cover that I feel like.
I had cancer. I'm in remission now.
Right.
Well, this was something I will say watching this, you know, it was, I mean, we shot this 7 years ago, 8 years ago. It came out 5 years ago. It blows my mind to think of where I was at the time and how young I was. And I don't think I realized until watching it this time that we were both sort of lost souls and both in sort of a massive changing point in our lives. Whereas I don't think at the time I realized I was going through anything in terms of my sexuality. I was like, oh, I guess I'm just straight and I really like her.
I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, I think I realized that I was actually gay a few years ago. And that was after we were married and after we had kids.
Okay. Okay. There's a lot to, as Chris Cuomo says, unpack here. Yes.
But truly, I mean, because I think I fell in love with Tig. It made me aware of why I had all these horrible relationships before or what my relationships really were. And then to go, I had to piece through all of that. And so when I'm watching this, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so confused. You know, she's going through so much and then I'm over here like, I think I like you.
Well, because Stephanie, before Tig, you had never dated a woman.
No.
You'd only been with men.
Yeah.
See, this is fascinating to a
And I wasn't
person.
Like, well, that's why I think everyone's gay.
Gay people do think everybody's gay or a little bit gay.
Yeah. Well, because I know, I think there's like, the people who in their childhood or at some point know they're gay and then they're hiding it or they're trying to reconcile how they're going to tell people or how they're going to go about it. I wasn't that person.
Or you didn't feel from the beginning like, oh, I know, and I'm going to have to go through this whole thing. But that's what's so crazy to me, because in my mind, I always think, oh, yeah, you know when you're 5 or 6 and you... But
I didn't know.
What?
I know. I'm over here with this haircut and this flannel telling you. I didn't know.
Come on. When did you know, Tig?
when I met Stephanie. No.
That's not true.
No, not until I was maybe 21 or so. I don't know, 20. But that's the other thing about Stephanie is her relationships that she's had with men. It's not like she had these 5-year-long relationships with men.
No.
They were just short.
I would just, yeah. I dated a lot. I was always relieved when it was over. I liked a lot of space, a lot of distance. I thought I was just having fun and I didn't really, and I was like, I mean, maybe someday I'm just going to meet that guy and it's going to feel different.
And you'll and connect.
Then it, yeah.
And then you never did.
Never.
Okay, because one of the really interesting things about this documentary is watching you, Stephanie, because really you are a very strong person. And to watch what you were going through, because here's Tig, she's going through her own journey. I mean, crazy, awful things have happened to her. She meets you, you guys spark, and you're starting to fall in love. And it's like, oh, by the way, I've got cancer. I'm trying to have a baby. My life is super crazy. Here's the film crew. I'd be like, why don't you call me in a few years? Let's see if we're still interested.
I did that.
You did? I know. Well, so you guys broke up for a second.
We didn't break up.
Mm. We weren't together.
We never were together. Mm. We just stopped hanging out.
That sounds.
Well, I didn't think I was dating her. I thought I was hanging out with a friend.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think I was dating you. I thought we were hanging out, but I was also looking at you going, well, I like this
She
person.
Cute.
Yeah.
Mm. But Stephanie, were you looking at her going, oh, maybe I'm not straight?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was a hesitant.
Well, because I don't think I could get there quite yet. I think I was like, I'm straight. But I really like Tig.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I was dating guys at the time, I was like, I was noticing I was prioritizing Tig and I would have rather hung out with her than the guys. And so it became clear to me that I was falling in love with her. And then I kind of went down the cliche journey of like, oh, it's not about labels and it's just mm-hmm. about love. And it's mm-hmm. like everybody can love each other. And I'm not gay, but I'm not straight either.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you guys are falling in love. You've got the camera crew going. Oh, there's this one clip, Tig, that I really want to hear because it captures you so well.
Oh.
When you're falling in love with Stephanie and you're thinking you're going to have a baby and everything's sort of on a really good track, people are paying attention to you as an artist, as a comedian with a really strong individual voice mm-hmm. That connects with people. There's a scene here where you're driving and then you're talking about how elated you are.
I have way more to be excited and positive about than I did a year ago. I couldn't be happier.
Tig, I mean, if that's you at your most excited,
mm-hmm.
it really, it really disturbs me. I mean, I would like for that to be your ringtone. I'm excited. I could not be
Cheryl,
happier.
It was a very deep, deep joy I was feeling.
It's the real epitome of you being Eeyore.
It's so true. It is just like, I'm so happy. I'm on top of the world.
Cheryl, how dare you? Have you not had a moment like that where you are earnestly saying, I've never been this happy before? You feel like in that moment I should have been like, I'm so happy. I've never been so happy before.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to see a little energy behind it.
Read
I would
a
like
room.
You're in a car.
Read it's the like car.
I think anybody in that car would have appreciated just a little bit more energy, just a little bit more, hey, things are great at this moment. I am actually having a great moment. I'm so happy.
Cheryl Hines.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe you're treating me. I was having a sincere emotional moment, and you were wanting me to do leprechaun kicks.
There's a lot of space in between what you did and leprechaun kicks, did you say?
Stephanie, you were in that moment with me. It was a sweet moment between us.
Yeah.
When
I
you
know
say
how you talk.
Cheryl's.
Well, I think it's very funny. Yes, I in the time I took that as very sincere and genuine, and I think it's very true. It is also, you're never going to do the other version. I think where you really see you at your like most joyful is when you're laughing. It's where you're like not in control.
It is cute. It is true because it's when I was watching the film, there were kind of only a few times when you're really just laughing and you're not self-aware.
Yeah.
And it's cute. It's fun.
Oh, when mm-hmm. we're talking about the Onion article Poop. Where the diarrhea.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know why you picked that to really laugh your ass off. But
I mean, how funny is that? Seagull with diarrhea
it's not as funny
barely
as you
makes it to Crowded Beach in time.
Well, I pointed it out when she's on Conan and she goes like, you know, motions that her boobs are gone. And he goes, who's your doctor? The Fonz. And it's, you can see that Tig that genuinely got you.
Yeah.
And you see that joy.
Yeah. It's fun.
Well, it's Conan. You know, I was telling Stephanie that what she didn't know was that appearance on Conan. I forced myself to go on Conan because I was so uncomfortable. I don't mean it in a bad way, uncomfortable. It's just I was not used to having so much attention on me and having people worried. It took everything to get that Adam Ant t-shirt on over my incisions across my chest. Ugh. It was so painful and hard, but I did that because I wanted to go out there and say I'm okay. And it's just such an interesting thing because I was still draining blood from my incisions at that point in time, but I felt compelled to just like, I'm okay. You know,
I think why everybody really responded to your story and how you told it and how you're still telling it is that you had so many life-changing, awful things happen that most people would just be in their bed with the covers up over their head. Like, I can't go on. I can't do it. But like you're saying, even to walk out on Conan and laugh, it did. It made us all feel better. It made us all feel like, oh my God, she did it. I see it with my own eyes. She's laughing. She's talking about it. There's a way to get through really bad things and and maybe even laugh about them. I think a lot of people probably have a hard time getting to that point, but it's been very inspirational. That's why people were so drawn to it, and I think are drawn to you. Ew, I said something nice about you.
Thank you, Cheryl. That's so sweet. That made me happy.
I can't believe I'm being ribbed after all I've been through. Did you not see the documentary? Either of you?
By the way, I've seen it so many times, and then I had to watch it again. I'm like, oh, okay. I get it.
Did you ever cry any time that you've watched that documentary?
No. But I'm not a big crier. I haven't cried.
You're not a big crier, but we ask each other a lot of times.
That's true.
After documentaries, right? Did you cry? You asked me with the octopus,
and you did cry.
I did.
Tig's a crier.
I'm a crier.
I mean, listen, I cry when I watch Dancing with the Stars. Is that weird?
But you don't cry when your dear pal Tig is just suffering blow after blow after blow. Stephanie and I were crying in bed last night, not sobbing, but we would turn to each other and
little
hold
tears.
Hands and aww. Kiss and have teary eyes.
No, I mean, Dancing with the Stars, they're trying really hard to remember their steps and they're like pushing themselves in a way that most people never have a chance to.
Well, I cry watching I Can See Your Voice.
For completely different reasons. Okay. Listen, I think we have to, do we have to start wrapping this up?
I was just going to ask Stephanie just a general reaction that you have to the movie and life now and...
Well, that's the thing is when we watched it before in 2015, we were still kind of very close to it and we were still there in our lives. And now having been married and have two kids and this whole other storyline around you having kids and your surrogate, it just seems like insane choices were made in that documentary. And at the time it all seemed normal. And now I'm like, oh my God, we were just going with it, you know? Mm-hmm. When you're in something and you're deciding like, oh, I met this surrogate on a podcast. I'm flying up there and I'm going to take this risk. We were just saying yes to everything. And it blows my mind to now be where we are now and go, oh my God, we really did that. Like followed through on all of those things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a miracle that you guys, when the dust settled, you looked at each other and said, oh yeah, I still like you.
Well, I haven't checked in with Stephanie recently.
Maybe we should do a check-in right now. Stephanie, how's it going in the relationship?
Yeah, I still like you, Tig.
Oh.
Do you?
I do.
It wasn't a feeling of...
Well, you know what? I'll say this, too.
Uh-oh.
But no, but like this is...
Oh, God.
For the most part, I like you.
Look, I have my own issues and feelings and thoughts, so nobody's checked in with me yet, but go ahead.
But I also think like revisiting everything you went through, I was like, oh my God, you went through all that. Not that it's not, we don't think about it or it's not still alive in our lives, but it's just so heavy.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Talking about your mom and talking about cancer and talking about C. diff and a break, like all of those things. Then you meet somebody, I have all my shit with my sexuality. It's just like it's so intense. And now we don't really talk about those things, or really, they're just sort of part of the fabric of our relationship. And so when you look back and you see it sort of in the present like that, it's just, it blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a bond, because to meet somebody now in your life and to explain what happened back then, it would be like, oh, somebody would be like, oh, okay, cool.
No, right. Somebody would be like, oh yeah, I got the album.
Yeah. No, I know. I know everything about it. That's cool that you went through that. But yeah, to experience it with each other, I'm sure is extraordinary, and it makes you really close. Tig, how are you feeling about the relationship?
Who cares? Well, what's really, I guess it's like any relationship or anybody alive. I mean, it's not like we went through that period of time and then life settled and then we were just married and had children.
Easy.
We've had such intense, busy, crazy lives. And I would say this pandemic is the first time, probably similar to many people also, that I feel like we've sat still. And we're coming up on 8 years of being together. And in that time, we've had incredible highs and incredible lows. And I have had ongoing medical issues the entire time. The entire time. And I mean, I feel like, I think I ask Stephanie all the time, do you feel like you purchased a lemon? She didn't know that that was a saying for a bad car.
That's what old people say.
Yeah.
What's wrong with a lemon?
Yeah. You're like, I love lemons. Yeah. I wish I had a lemon right now.
Ooh, I love that.
Well, look no further. You married one. But yeah, and then put on top of it, we have twins, which is, that's hard. Having a child
young.
Is hard. We have twins.
You have young kids.
We have yeah. young twins. And so a lot of what we've been through has been really the best and the worst of it all. And I think that oddly, hearing about so many relationships that have struggled in the pandemic, I mean, we've had hard moments too in the pandemic, but inside our home, within our family, obviously there's horrible stuff going on in the pandemic. I feel like we've fared quite well.
Yeah.
You feel that way, or?
Yeah.
It's going to be awkward if she says no. It's going to be such a sad ending to this podcast.
No, Stephanie's, I disagree. Like, thank you for having me.
Let's agree to disagree. Anyway.
Well, no, I'm just on top of the, when you're saying that period in 2013, that it was a bonding time. And I guess I'm just trying to make the point that it's been endless moments like that. Not exact. I mean, I don't know. How do you feel, Stephanie?
Yeah. And I completely agree. It just calmed everything down.
Uh-huh.
And gave us time together.
And we've had time together because we
do everything together.
We do everything together.
God,
and
don't
we
you guys
work
get
together.
Sick of each other?
I mean, I guess we get sick of each other.
Well, listen, in quarantine, who doesn't? You know, I mean, I think we're all like, you can't help but to snap every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, you're still on the couch.
I have to say, through it all, it has been a remarkable journey with Stephanie. And where we are now, I would say, if people knew what we've been through, aside from what is so public, if people knew the ins and outs of what our life has really been,
mm-hmm. they'd be shocked.
I think it's a lot. And I think that what's really surprising to me, I guess, is that, and I'm not trying to just pull it together with a positive button, but I love Stephanie, and nobody makes me laugh harder than Stephanie. And it's really something. Why are you shaking your head?
You're so sweet.
It's true.
You're a little sweet, yeah.
You guys need to do this on your own time, I think.
But it's true. It's true.
It's very sweet. It is very, very sweet.
Listen, all the good, all the bad. I enjoy her. I go to her for advice, and I say it all the time, privately and publicly, but we laugh so hard every single day, like gasping for air, crying, laughing. Is that not true?
Yeah, I think that's what drew us to each other. And I think even on In a World, that's what the connection was, if there was one, you know, was that we were enjoying each other.
Yeah, there's so
many. Are you done? Oh.
I mean, we've got a show to wrap up here, guys.
Okay. Well, I love you, Stephanie.
Okay.
Cheryl.
Yeah, we get
it. Let's wrap this up.
They're trying to get everyone to be gay.
You guys are trying to turn the world. Okay.
I will say this. I think what people forget about relationships, because, you know, you go to work and you see there's Bob. He's always in a good mood, but we don't know what's happened with Bob and Sally at home. Sally could be really sick. Bob could have lost his mom, and he shows up to work the next day. And
poor Bob and Sally.
Don't get fixated on the name. But they, you know, if you are in a relationship with somebody, you do have a bond, and you do go through some. You have to. If you've been together for any amount of time, you've gone through some difficult times and some serious times. And we've all got stuff to worry about and deal with. But then it is how you deal with it and move to pick yourself up, which is Tig's story, which is fascinating.
It was one of Netflix's first documentaries.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you if you thought this was successful. Do you think in the eye of the world, the Tig documentary is a success?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it's certainly no Tiger King, but I would say it's a success in that I felt, especially on the heels of that album that came out, it was just another part of pushing that wave. And I could feel... You too, Stephanie, right? I could feel that this was a watched documentary.
Well, I think like for one documentary, you know, you have like people that are struggling with fertility and IVF issues, and then you have disease, you have the loss of a parent, you have sexuality, and then you have like the structure of finding a comedic joke to work, you know, that like there's kind of people get really into those.
How uncomfortable was that to watch?
I thought
that's like the worst part. You're like, oh, Tig.
I thought it was so interesting. Yeah, because you were writing a new joke, and then we saw it after you first wrote it, and the audience was like, I don't think so. And then a few months later, you try it again, you changed it a little, and the audience was like, yeah, it's okay. And then by the end, we get to see the joke, and you had really figured out what exactly was funny about it, what people would respond to. I liked seeing that part.
I did too. I think that's so cool. It's such a sort of small piece in it, but it's so cool.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we were working on the documentary and trying to figure out how to make the story, because there's five, I think, major storylines all happening at once. So structuring that, it was a beast. And I remember coming back to the filmmakers and just saying, you know what I can't shake that has to happen in this documentary is it has to be ultimately about a comedian. Whatever we're doing with the love story, with IVF, with health, whatever it is, I don't want to lose focus of a film about a comedian. And so adding that thread in really, I think, helped, because
it
was the thread that was constant no matter what the other storylines were doing.
Yeah.
And no matter how intense or deep or sad it went, you were also following the life of a comedian.
Yeah.
So that was something that hit me in the middle of the process that I was so thankful I thought of, and not that I'm saying I
no,
made
but,
this
but
documentary.
You're right. No, because a documentarian might be more likely to focus
on cancer or right. the love story.
Right.
And I thought that they could all work together, but really needing to make sure that was the central theme. But I think the filmmakers, there's so many people that worked on this, and I think they all did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, they did. They did. And you guys were very brave to to be
again, another
exposed.
Thing you're just saying yes to.
People have later asked, going like, what? Oh, my God, what did we do?
And people have asked, oh, will you do a follow-up documentary or what about a reality show with your... No way in hell. No way in hell.
You would never.
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 Okay. I think it's time to move into our final segment here.
Cheryl, what was your favorite documentary that we watched this year?
Well, I love them all. I really loved Amanda Knox. So I had a great time watching it.
I know you did.
I know. Oh, maybe I'd flip for her. Is that weird? Is that what you guys call it?
No.
Okay. I loved the Amanda Knox documentary, and then I really loved talking to her. And I really, listen, there was something about Tiger King that was so fascinating. And it was a fascinating documentary, but also because... It came out like the day after everybody went into lockdown, and it seemed like the whole world watched it at the same time. And it was mm-hmm. something about it was just magical like that we were all experiencing this crazy thing together that I loved. And then we got to talk to Eric Good, who was the director and producer. So I loved those two things a lot. How about you, Tig?
I mean, as I'm going through, it is hard to pick because it's really hard because I can't even remember the artist is
present,
just something I never would have watched normally. And I'm so glad I watched that. It was really interesting to talk to Amanda, as you said. There's so many. I think I can't help but go back to, well, I'm always a fan of The Staircase.
God, I like The Staircase.
It's so good. But I still love... Stephanie, would you guess which one I love?
Octopus?
No. A Band Called Death.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I did love The Octopus, too. But A Band Called Death, there's something... I just love...
That story.
I love the story, and I just love rock guys. I just love them. I love them. Growing up, I just hung out with the rock musicians and just little rocker bodies and drums and music and
little rocker bodies.
I love that world.
Do you think that is a compliment if somebody says to a guy, "You've got a great little rocker body"?
Of course.
Okay.
The cool rocker look. Yeah, that's a compliment because you're a rocker. You want to look cool. The music sounds awesome. But you know what? Every time I'm watching that documentary, I just insert myself in there.
You
just like
you want to be
walking around with those dudes. I love that documentary. I'm sorry. I just
maybe
do.
You are straight.
You know I love that documentary.
No, I know. I forgot about that one. I liked The Staircase, and I liked the Fyre Festival one. That killed me.
That story is crazy.
And that it all happened. And when those people show up on the boat or on the buses and they see where they're staying, I don't think I've ever laughed harder in a documentary. And they're like, oh my God.
She did laugh a lot.
We paid thousands of dollars for these tents. And they were all running to the tents.
Hurricane evacuation
to, like,
tents.
Grab water, and they were like hoarding pillows and mattresses. And the one guy who's like, where are the villas?
Oh, they're not here.
I mean, listen, it's funny now. And hopefully those people who experienced it can laugh about it now. At the time, I'm sure.
They're probably not laughing. There's probably nobody laughing
Well, at least we get to enjoy it and laugh our heads off. All right, guys. Well, this has been a great, great episode.
Guys, thanks for having me on.
You know what? It's been our honor and pleasure, Stephanie.
Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, I love your podcast. I'm a huge fan. I, too, love documentary.
I have to go make lunch for our little cubs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Once again, on your own time. Hey, listen, if you guys like the show, if you enjoy our podcast, we would love for you to leave us a message or a comment or a review.
We love reading them.
We really do. So keep letting us know what you think about the docs and leave us a review, and we just might read your response on the show. Tig, I wanted to tell you, one of my friends sent me a text that there's another woman out there, another listener, who wants to get a dog just so she can name it Dr. Becky Hines. After my sister. So if you have a dog named Dr. Becky Hines, we would love to see it.
What does your sister think of all these dogs being named Dr. Becky Hines?
I think she's flattered.
Okay. And do you know that during your appearance on Don't Ask Tig, you said something like, I'll tell Becky? And now I end my episode with I'll tell Becky.
I say
a running joke on the podcast is thank you, Dana, which is how I used to end every episode. So now I say thank you, Dana, and I'll tell Becky. And that's how the episode ends. So let Dr. Becky Hines know that I end every Don't Ask Tig episode with I'll tell Becky.
I am.
You can tell Becky.
I'll tell Becky. Okay. So those are our favorite documentaries of the year. And we would love for you guys to find us on social media and tell us the ones that you loved.
Yes, please.
If you liked any.
And we are going to take a break over the holidays, but we will be back in the new year with new episodes. Should we do this again?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Yeah, let's do it again. Tig and Cheryl True Story is hosted by me, Tig Notaro, and Cheryl Hines. It's produced by Gabi Kovacic and Thomas Ouellette. Audio engineered and edited by Thomas Ouellette, with music by David Sussin. Special thanks to Patrick McDonald and Stephanie Allen. Follow us on social media for updates and review and rate True Story on Apple Podcasts. We really, really appreciate it. You can email us at tigandcherylstruestory@gmail.com. On our next episode, we'll be talking about Tickled.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.